Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello, you beautiful people.
Justin Robert Young.
Yo!
And our producer is Bryce Neshcom Castillo.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Oh, boy, gentlemen. My pick for later on, spoiler alert, is going to be A Fire Upon the Deep, the audiobook, the Werner Vinge book, which I love. I read it before, never listened to the audiobook, but it's about AI, and it's like this sort of post-singularity situation where you have super advanced AI, different regions of the universe where light speed travels is different, where AI can do much more complicated things or simple things. And kind of the analogy they give is like humanity is kind of like the creatures at the very, very bottom of the ocean. And then things are higher up above and then massive things up above us. But anyhow, in the midst of reading this book, I come across a headline which you just kind of you're already, you know, if you're about to go in the ocean and you watch Jaws and you're kind of like,
makes you think twice.
Yeah, there is an announcement. NASA is going to have a press conference involving, and I'll break this down a little bit more so it's not as scary, the search for extraterrestrial life and AI.
Okay.
Now again, our fear for new listeners or people who aren't quite cogent, our fear, I would say my biggest fear, it's not so much running into aliens, it's running into rogue AIs that wiped out all the other life, you know, on another planet, you know, yeah. And now discovers us, Skynet, you know, alien Skynet. So, but that's not quite what it is, as far as we know.
Okay, well, from the version of the headline that we're seeing on The Independent, it looks as though it's our AI that made a planet-hunting breakthrough based on the data from the Kepler telescope, I'm assuming?
So, what this is actually what we believe it to be is that they've used – Google has a really great AI algorithms for the capability of sorting through image recognition, pattern searching, et cetera. They partnered with NASA, and they've had this very interesting relationship between – Google's actually leased airfield space from NASA and has been doing some other kinds of experiments with them, that they've been using machine learning, et cetera, to look through all of this data from Kepler to find – yeah, so it's not – we did not find an alien AI, which just, again, my knee-jerk reaction to the headline is, all right, it's done. We're gray goo. Goodbye, everybody. But instead, what we think may be is they think they've made again, NASA announcements about breakthroughs are never – they're about 10% as exciting as they often
– yeah, and let's say we believe at any moment they will give a press conference that utterly surpasses our expectations. However, we are big fans of these kinds of announcements, and we have heard some sensational hints beforehand. And I would say almost entirely NASA's announcements have while always having been significant and important, the early buzz tends to be a little bit 10% to 30% higher than what we are delivered.
And I would – their two most hyped ones in the last couple decades turned out to be not true.
Yeah, 10% to 100%, not as good as promised.
Because what it was the arsenic based life forms and the what was it, the thing on the comet or whatever,
the microbial meteor that they found, the Martian meteor on Earth, that they found evidence of what could be microbial life.
They did a fine job of pointing out that a rocket shaped looking comet passing through our solar system was of extraterrestrial or extrasolar origin.
Well, there's a lot of space agencies involved in that, but
okay. Look, I'm trying to.
They've done amazing stuff, and there's departments there. They're landing robots on Mars. You look at the Dawn spacecraft. This is the thing that we've sent to go orbit Ceres to go intercept all this thing. This thing is the size of a moving van. It is a spaceship. It is not a small thing. It's a huge thing. It's got ion engines. It is patrolling through the solar. They've got incredible achievements. By all means, there is just amazing stuff. When it comes to the extraterrestrial life, the hunt or the search for that, sometimes there's been this, hey, and then you're like, it's cool. But this is, again, and a lot of it, science is incremental. You know, we went from in our lives, we remember like maybe there are planets out beyond our solar system. Maybe it's special. To now it's like, no, that's stupid. There are thousands that we've observed. And now we're getting to the point where we're able to look at the atmospheres and other materials on there. And we're high level that at some point people thought we'd never be able to do. So I'm excited. I'm excited. I mean, we're all big NASA fans. You hear us talk a lot about SpaceX, things like this, but we're fans of people doing awesome stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So where are we headed here?
I think what we're getting is I guess the prediction is that we're going to get, you know, the announcement is that I don't know. I mean, I don't know what we're going to get other than what would be exciting would be that looking through that data is what will get us excited is an Earth-like planet, like Earth orbit, Earth similarity, whatever. And we've heard this Earth-like and it's twice the mass of Earth and it's like 3 inches away from its sun. You know, like,
Can I offer a counterexample of something?
No, Brian, that would make it's not that kind of show.
Very excited. It would be, even if they didn't have any new particular planet that they were excited about, if they told us that, like, something as simple as for the first 3 years of Kepler, we were able to check out 100 stars per year, and we found 17 planets. I'm making all these numbers up; they're all wrong. But now,
I'm factually down. Wikipedia
but now
is right.
now thanks to a partnership with Google and their artificially intelligent machine learning, we are now processing 7,000 planets per or stars per year, and have better tracking than ever before. Like that kind of core technology focused announcement. Would
boring.
Have me super no way. That would have me so stoked. That would be the
fight
same.
Fight asleep here.
And no, that's like Tim Cook talking about how many gigaverses are in the new iPhone and so on.
Other Steve Jobs, we'd be on other planets by now.
Okay. I mean, you're not wrong, but.
I think that's great. Yes, 100%. Yes, absolutely. I think that. Every time our tools get better, exciting things happen slowly, and there's a lot of this. Maybe we're seeing this, maybe we're that. We already have the abundance of water throughout our solar system is amazing. That had been the big, you know, like, well, alien invasions are here for our water. Guess what? Go to Europa. Twice as much water as we have and a lot lower delta V. You know.
Yeah.
Selling out Europa.
Yeah. Snitching on Europa. Swing away.
You know, funny thing, and a side note, I was at I'm involved with a project involving scuba diving, and I went to go do a refresher course because I'm an idiot and I forget things. Apparently you need oxygen. You need tanks down there. Mm. Apparently it's not just cool that you have the suit. And I'm sitting there going through kind of one of these classroom sessions, and the instructor is up the front sort of talking, and it's this very, you know, boring looking fluorescent lights, you know, slides showing you this. And I start to sort of daydream like, man, like, you know, by the end of this century, I could see a classroom session like this on Europa in a room not unlike this, explaining like, all right, when you get into your water suits or whatever, here's the life forms you've got to watch out for. If you get eaten by this, you got to do this. And it's sort of the kind of like the future will be exciting and boring at the same time. It will be this.
It's the boringness that excites me the most. That's one of the things I loved about the Sean Connery movie, Outland, that takes place on an asteroid, mining asteroid. And it's basically, it's a frontier story of a murder mystery. And the sheriff's got a,
it's high noon. It's literally high noon in space.
Yeah. And it's great because it's so boring. That was the best parts of Firefly. That's what I love about The Expanse is how, you know, the parody of their glamorous parts of the belt. And then there's, you know, drudgery mining parts of the belt. I love making space tech boring.
And I liked when in Avatar, you know, when they go to the offices, you know, the corporate offices, it felt like
every corporate office you've ever been in.
He's got the golf putter in there. It's like an oil company kind of thing. And it's like, that's what I loved about Cameron's, you know, Cameron is, I think Lucas was the first one in Star Wars to give us that lived-in effect that, you know, a space trucker's spaceship's going to feel like the inside of a trucker's sort of, you know, truck, you know, that the gleaming Navy is going to have things that are shiny and new. The rebellion, this ragtag rebellion, is going to have things that are they're clean but dinged up and whatnot. And then when Ridley Scott gave us Alien, you know, he said, oh, well, these are space truckers and I'm going to make this look like a mining rig and it's dirty and things are valves are popping stuff open, because he was inspired by Star Wars. And then James Cameron, you know, the same thing. He had that same reaction watching Star Wars going, oh, my God, this feels so real. And it's one of these people forget, like, it's fantasy. It is. But it feels real because of those details, the griminess. Things got dirty.
Well, and also nobody's impressed with it. And this is one of the unfortunate betrayals of young George Lucas versus old George Lucas. You can see interviews and documentaries where George Lucas says the biggest mistake science fiction directors make is they invest so much time and energy into their miniatures and their set that they can't help but do long, slow shots to show it off. What you should do is swoop past it in 3 seconds and then blow it up. And of course, you know, 20, 30 years later, he falls victim to the exact same thing with the gee whiz world of digital filming and green screening and so on.
Yeah. I mean, because for him, I think he got into the sort of thinking of, oh, well, you know, this is what people want. So I'm going to give you sort of a funny little thing. So we talk about the idea of spaceships looking sooty, or, you know, the idea of the used thing. And I'm going to send Bryce a photo here. And this was not planned. But this is actually relates to this because of like that lived in sort of look. Remember when we spoke to Chris Anderson, the guy who, or Chris Taylor, or
Chris Taylor.
Yeah, yeah. You know, who wrote fantastic book, How Star Wars Conquered the Universe. I mean, that was just,
@FutureBoy on Twitter. And at @FutureBoy is his handle on Twitter. Worth following because he's always throwing some interesting stuff. You could tell he's somebody who loves.
Wait, don't show. Go back. Go erase. Hide.
Okay. You could tell he's somebody who, I don't want to say love hates the Star Wars universe, but somebody who has a very realistic eye for it and like us, wants it to be a good universe, but is not afraid to call out the parts that have not worked.
So somebody asked, why were there chains and dripping water in the Nostromo? That's the spaceship from Alien. Because it was a working ship. Why are there, you know, why are there leaking roofs? You know, why does condensers, you know?
Well, and I don't have a problem with any of that because I understand that you are speaking, you are telling a story in a inherently unrelatable world. We cannot relate to what life in the 23rd, 24th century is going to be. Everything will be nonsense to us. So instead, you know, as a filmmaker, you give hooks that conjure feelings that are consistent with the feelings that the characters have in that future scenario.
But some things might be surprisingly familiar because you still have fallbacks and stuff. If you took somebody from, you know, a British ship, you know, in the 1790s, and you put him on board an aircraft carrier, and explaining to him the concept of an aircraft carrier is going to blow his mind. What does it do? Oh, it's for airplanes to take off from. Back up. You know? But then you take him below decks and you show them like, yeah, this is how we fasten the aircraft down. And he's like, yeah, this is the problem we have with cannons. This is the problem we have with this. He's gonna get a lot of it, you know, really, really, really quickly and go like, oh, yeah, I get this. This is the same. This is our galley. Like, yeah, this is our galley. It's the same problem. You know, now the food, he's going to look at the labels on the food like, wait, what's a microwave do? You know, the gas stove, you know, a lot of simple things like that. But anyhow, I think you would use electric on a ship. But anyhow, I digress. That lived-in look is very, very interesting. And so I brought up the Chris Taylor book because one of the things he talked about, like he says, you know, I found lots of examples of people being inspired by Star Trek, but not by Star Wars. You know, I'm like, dude, you're asking the wrong people. Elon Musk, the Falcon rocket is named for the Millennium Falcon. You know, they have they called the grid fins the X-Wing. It's got an X-Wing. It's got a Falcon. And you want any more proof of the inspiration, go to the photo I have now. This is the next mission that's due to launch on the 12th, right? This is both the Dragon rock, the Dragon space capsule at the top has been reused before. It's reused. Now look at the Falcon 9 rocket itself. What do you see?
I mean, you see scoring from the heat of reentry.
Yep. This is the rocket they're going to launch on a NASA mission in just a couple days.
That has to be an intentional decision. Like, you talk to PR talks to the engineers and say, is there any reason we should bother to repaint this?
You mean Elon?
Yes, exactly. PR being Elon. Elon says, do we have to repaint it? And they say no. And then he says, good, because I want everybody to see this lady's been around. That's brilliant.
Yep.
Listen, Elon Musk loves Star Wars so much, he spent the last 2 days trying to make sure everybody understood he was getting making a Spaceballs reference on Twitter.
with which one?
He said, well, when they sell 50,000 Boring Company hats, he'll do a flamethrower.
Oh.
And then just in case people didn't get it, he's like, I know it's unorthodox, but kids love it, which is the line that, you know, yogurt hats.
He did a thing earlier, a few days ago, like, you know, this is the best thing about, you know, marketing you can ever learn. It was the clip from Spaceballs. I mean, they have the Tesla. They now in the Roadster, too, because, like, they had, remember, they had plaid mode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They've gone to plaid. Yeah.
They've gone to plaid. I think if Mel Brooks wants to do another one, just ask Elon.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah. Privately financing. Are you kidding? Yeah.
But anyhow, I think that's cool. We're actually sending stuff, hardware back up that's been worn, that looks like it's been used. And, you know, like you look at a jet and you see some, you know, exhaust burn on it. You're like, okay, cool. This baby's got some experience.
So this is happening when?
The 12th.
And this will be the very first time they've reused it. Wait, tomorrow. Wow. And this will be the very first time anyone has ever reused a first stage of a rocket.
No, we've used first stages before.
No. I said reused.
Oh, reused, like
No, I think that they've launched a first stage that's been used before, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they keep bringing them down.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, then
they've reused it, but this is the first time they're reflying a booster and the Dragon at the top.
Got it.
That's what makes it special, is both pieces have previously been flown.
Oh.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah.
Also very
phallic. So, yeah, we've reflown boosters before. That was a big deal because, remember, they took like 9 months to finally refly one. And then they've had the Dragon, so now the Dragon's like been reusable now. So now the only thing that's not reused is the inner stage, which has one Merlin engine there, which is part of the cost. But the idea that they're reusing the top and the bottom – I mean, that's an amazing, amazing thing. But too bad it can't be done, guys. Can't be done.
We stopped dreaming. Thank you, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, can't be done. It's might be done.
I love, man. It's so perfect. That quote is just, you know, just so great that it came at that moment in time. Like, you know, like a year before we're like relaunching rockets, like, you know, dramatically bringing down the price of how to get into space, fundamentally reshaping our relationship with the cosmos.
Do you think Neil deGrasse Tyson knew at that moment that he was entering the great pantheon of quotes like, no computer will ever need more than 1K of RAM?
No. In fact, I'll bet you that if you talk to him, if he were here right now and we were smugly rubbing that quote in his face and he were smugly looking back at us, he would explain why what he said really wasn't what we thought he said. And what he really meant was SpaceX is amazing. And
still the world without NASA, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a wonderful partnership. A wonderful, wonderful partnership, you know, and I'm excited about Blue Origin stepping up and providing services and stuff. And, you know, I want to wear some Blue Origin shirts too, you know.
I think
he did it to get people moving. Yeah, because these plans weren't already in motion and already happening, you know.
I mean, I'll tell you what, Texas sharpshooter fallacy is a pretty good way to run a system, you know, just say a bunch of stuff and whenever stuff lands, be like, yeah, that's what I intended.
Yeah, there's a mentality that's like, I don't know, that if it doesn't have made by NASA's stamp on it or this or that, then people aren't as we've seen that with our friend Richard Garriott, oh, Brian's friend, who has been in space, done everything the spaceman's supposed to do. But is he an astronaut?
Nope. They had to call him a cosmonaut because you're not allowed to be an astronaut unless you're from NASA. That's why they were originally called NASA astronauts. But they trademarked it and they held it in your face. You know what?
Really? NASA astronaut?
Oh, no. I'm making that part up.
Then why would they just do NASTronaut?
Well, NASTronaut would work, but okay. Hey, man, it's hard to write this stuff on the fly.
No, yeah.
But I'm with you, man. It's like a spaceman's a spaceman. I'll call them what they are.
Or woman. I mean, yeah, you know, like the NASA's official designation is space flight participant.
You were there. Here's a ribbon. But I mean, I do think that there's. I think the larger thing is that everybody can be better when the best available resources are available to as many people as possible, including NASA and specifically NASA.
Yep. We got a bunch of very rich guys that want to spend a lot of their money doing R&D and take a lot of risk on themselves to move the thing forward. So, you know, what better way to tax the rich than stuff like that?
And actually, that's no lie. That's how the Tesla Model 3 came to pass, is that essentially Elon Musk and I don't want to make this just about Elon Musk, but basically the ultra rich paid a subsidy tax. They overpaid for all of their roadsters for the notoriety of having one, and in doing so funded a publicly available, incredible, awesome, allegedly awesome battery powered car.
Yep.
Speaking of which, quick side jag, and this may not go anywhere because I didn't read much of it, but Is there a car that's running on capacitors instead of batteries? Is that what I heard? Is that somebody's working on one that has supercapacitors?
There's I don't know to the specifics of that. You know, somebody, there may be a demonstration thing that uses some form of supercapacitor, but I'm not aware of supercapacitors being produced in volume in any place.
I just remembered where I got this idea. It was from I was in a cab in New York, and it was a Jeopardy question. There, so-and-so company is planning to make these cars more next level by not using batteries and instead using this. And the answer was supercapacitors.
Yeah, I mean, it proposed. Yeah, you know, sure. You know, there's like, was Faraday or one of the other Lucid or somebody like that? I know they had said, oh, yeah, we're going to do supercapacitor tech. They came out with this announcement. People were like, okay, you know, if you guys think you can make that scale, that's great. Right. But some little credibility problem there.
Bryce looks like he found maybe the type of article that was being referenced.
Yeah, I'm trying to find a date on this. This is from IFL Science.
It might be an old idea that just recently, you know, these things like.
So the headline is graphene based supercapacitors could lead to battery free electric cars within 5 years.
Maybe.
And I guess for listeners, tell me if I got this right, and I'm sure none of us actually know. But as I understand it, batteries essentially generate electricity by having an anode and anode and a diode?
Cathode.
Anode and cathode, right? Whereas a capacitor is just straight up a bucket full of electricity that can discharge very, very quickly at once.
Yeah, like there's a chemical process in a battery. There's a chemical process that you change the state of something, and in the presence of pulling on it, it changes the state and it becomes another thing. And a lithium ion, there's thousands of different chemistries. When you're like, oh, we need to advance, you know, past lithium, it's like, that's kind of like saying we need to advance past copper in a sense. It's like there's a lot of different chemistries that go in there. You know, that's lithium ion is just basically one of the metals involved. It's a lot. You can have a lot of different chemistries there, and you can we've been improving efficiencies on there for the last 25 years. But yeah, where a supercapacitor is, imagine an electric plate separated, and one's got a bunch of electrons that are really excited. They're ready to jump that gap. you know, and that's it's just that. It's like it's just the material has there. There's not a chemistry. There's not a chemical change there. It's just that there's like there's an insulator there between them. And then you just being able to figure out how many you can how tightly can you pack those materials without them rupturing and just, hey, we're free and jumping. So, so could be cool. Yeah, I think supercapacitors are. Yeah, that will be when you move past having to have that chemical process that you reset every time you recharge and do it.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be great. It'll be great. How far are we away? We don't know. But yeah, it'd be cool. Speaking of high tech, really, really high tech. Imagine it's a few thousand years ago. We got two tribes. We got the Bryoks and the Justinons. And they're at war with each other.
Go on.
Right? Constantly at war with each other, battling back and forth. And they go to war and they got their... First, they were using wooden clubs. And the wooden clubs split apart on each other's heads, whatever. And the Bryonons, you know, one of them was digging around in the ground and found some rock and found some sort of this sort of kind of this... goldish hue sort of metal heated in the rock, and all of a sudden, you know, he had like, you know, had like some copper and tin, realized that they started mixing this thing up, they could make some bronze, you know, made some metal, maybe some swords out of this bronze.
I remember this moment because the leader of the Bryox said, we done it, boys. We got us the shiniest metals that make the finest weapons. None shall defeat us.
So you got this, you got your, you start building, you know, you build some spear tips first. You got a little bit of that, which is great.
I propose we begin with spear tips and then grow from there. Perhaps arrowheads. Who knows?
I'm just glad that I got the mixture of bronze mainly, right? So anyhow, you got your bronze, you're making your spear tips and you're making your swords. And Justin, they come up to you with their, they're like, hey, I've got my, my new wooden sword. That's great. I got my new wooden club, right?
Yeah.
And then the Bryox are like, oh, that's delightful. Slashing the clubs in half, left and right, slicing the Justinons in half, just them up left and right. All right.
Nothing personal. It's just we're playing Sid Meier's Civilization, and it's time for your city to become ours.
Well, some Justinons flee. They're like, man, this sucks. They've got this metal that's this material. Like, it's metal, man. Yeah, we've always had this word metal, and we didn't have a way to describe it.
Yeah.
You know, now we know that was metal. Like, only if there was a better metal. And somebody's like, well, you know.
Hey, hearing you over there. Ain't no better metal than the copper. We're smelting them together sometimes. I don't know.
Just everybody whisper. Let him talk himself out.
Yeah. And they're like, you know, what if somebody's like, what if we could, you know, somebody's like theoretical. They're sitting around the campfire. Somebody's like, what if we could take. You know, what if we could smelt, like, get a really, really high temperature, get this really stuffed, tougher metal we find on the rocks, this thing we call iron, but just it's too damn hot for us. What if we had a really high temperature smelting furnace to be able to get that out and we could start working the iron? And they're like, shut up.
Like, yeah. Okay. That's stupid.
But then, walking along and like, where are we going to retreat to? Like, oh, let's go to, you know, that deep pit, the crater. And they go to the crater and they find a big rock there in the middle of this. And it's shiny. Like, hey, you know, could this be a good material? We can get this out. We can extract this. And the next thing you know, they're mining meteors for iron.
Whoa.
What?
Okay, because you found a meteor. Site, found a big chunk of meteor, big chunk of iron meteor, and you're able to take that out and work that into tools. Now, Bryox are like, hey, look at us. We've got our amazing weapons. Nothing's better than us. And you come over the hill with it's like bronze, but it's dull. It's dull. It's not gleaming like ours. And then they hack your swords into pieces.
I'm beginning to think that
how does that feel? Huh? You're running around with your swords, and your swords are great. You're slaughtering us. Hey, guess what? I'm playing Civilization, and now it's time for you to be dead.
But butter emails.
So the long-winded explanation is that there's growing evidence now that they think some early use of iron actually did come from meteors. There's been the theory that meteor metal may have been used for certain tools and stuff, because there's periods of time where we think they had iron implements, but they didn't appear to have the technology to smelt or get, you know, extract iron from rock unless they had a really, really high, you know, material that had a high ratio of iron to everything else. And so they've done some analysis on some weapons and stuff like this, and now they're starting to think that there is more examples of iron being taken from meteors.
So, and that's just an availability bias. This is before they had mining technology that was deep enough or a good enough geological understanding. Whereas, meanwhile, the most available iron was just in these funny shaped rocks that were sporadically laid out over the planet.
Yeah, and being able to smelt it out, that's the hard part, too, is that you have to be able to work with iron. You have to get really, really high temperatures, comparatively so. And if you're working from, you know, Bronze Age sort of level stuff, bronze is nice because it works at a lower temperature. But when you want to start working with iron and steel, things have to get hotter and hotter, and you have to be able to build furnaces. So if you look at, like, you know, steel furnaces and stuff, you know, that's extremely, extremely
and
hot.
Steel is a more resilient. So you got help me with my metallurgy. Steel is an alloy of iron and usually nickel. It withstands higher temperatures.
Carbon. You get different chemistry. It's primarily iron, carbon, and then you might have other alloys or materials that go inside of there. So it's an alloy, which means it's, you know, a couple of these things together, and then you have other stuff that might go in there.
So it's basically a cocktail. And that allows it to be stronger and withstand higher heat. That so in a steel bowl you could melt a bucket of iron.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're seeing here the description on Wikipedia explains, like, you're talking 0.02% and 1.7% carbon by weight, and then, you know, with wrought iron has almost no carbon, et cetera. So.
Wow. So anyhow, iron, cast iron.
They can use other materials too besides carbon.
Yeah. Okay.
It also cannot be melted by jet fuel.
That's just a random true fact. True facts.
Just slipping that one in.
And actually, if you look at the availability of it, it clearly comes from a flat Earth.
Yeah.
That's why they call it flat iron, right?
Flat iron. Yep. So anyhow, but it's just some scientists have been looking at some early Stone Age tools and they found evidence of that, which is kind of cool, because then you think about some of the legends of stuff about, like, you know, heroes getting weapons from the gods.
Literally from the gods.
Yeah. And so that this could be from above fell the material to vanquish your enemies.
You know, the Justinians are sitting on a hillside, recovering from their wounds and upset. Like, we need something. And they see a spark. They see a shooting star overhead, and they feel something hit the ground. Like, what was that? Let's go look. And they find this material, and they build weapons. And then they go attack the Bryonons. And then finally the Bryonons are like, what? How did you do this? What's your explanation? Like, where did you get this material from?
The
tears of the ever loving sky bear that saw our plight and did weep our victory.
I'll tell you what, it makes this brief moment makes me think of religion as a military technology, because I have to imagine that. Of two tribes, the one that believes that God sent down sword seeds to give you the blessing that you're clearly meant to win this war would cause that tribe to maybe, you know, attack a little more forcefully, with a little more gusto, knowing that their God had definitely bestowed them the gift of preordained victory.
Sure. And if you were an alien species that wanted to influence one group over another.
Exactly.
This would be a great video game. You could just drop, basically your whole job is to drop, but watch from above and just sort of give loot boxes from the sky.
Isn't that, I'm trying to think of that playing a video like game. Don't they do that in like Populous or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Black and White. Black and White was very similar to that. That's the one where you played a god and you would have a big, avatar monster. God, I still remember. I remember some of the goofy songs that the villagers sang in that thing.
Like what? Like what? What were one of them?
Idle, idly. We simply can't leave until we get more wood. And so that was their subtle clue. So you would take wood and then you allowed them to build ships and so on.
Nice. Well, I'll tell
well,
you what.
Speaking of gifts from the gods.
Exactly. Folks, gods are great and sometimes fickle. And incidentally, patreon.com/nightattack is the way that you can support this show. Head on over there to patreon.com/nightattack.
Or weird things. What? Maybe even the show we're on. We could do either of those. Just
yeah. Yeah.
Patreon.com/weird things is where you can support this show. Patreon.com/weird things, folks. Make sure that you keep this show going. Patreon.com/weird things. That's
right,
the most controversial
part. Talking about how, as a performer, you do something so many times, your brain can go to other places.
Sure, man. No, it's like there's chunks of your brain that are just running a subroutine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I do it all the time on the one mic shows because I have two different emails for the one mic shows, and so I'm doing it's like at the same end of the same like thing. The Google Docs look identical because I made them and copied one off the other one, and it's just no, it's the Young American and not Justin Robert Young.
Well, for me, you know, because it's like Daddy has another family. And because, you know, Night Attack's you and Brian, but when you're here, you're like, ah, like your sister, Stephanie. I'm like,
that's not my sister.
that's your other wife's kids, Dad. I'm just me.
Whoops.
It's all right. I'm sure I'm just as important as your new children.
You are. Hey, you're always going to be important.
Yeah. Boy. You know what else is important?
What?
The next installment of
Journey Quest!
Previously on
Journey Quest!
We've got a seamstress chained up front. We can take care of everything you need, whatever you want. Just let me know.
Great.
Right? There's a town maybe half mile up the road. They've got gas.
I want to let each and every one of you know that you're idiots for believing in them. And we're going to make you look like idiots for ever thinking that they had a chance.
Man, what was their names? Dumbo and Gumbo?
Congo and Mongo?
No, or? They're Dumbo and Gumbo in our hearts. Ain't that right, Justin? Fist bump.
Yeah.
Fist bump. Not that one. That's my chainsaw fist. Actually,
fist
I take off my chainsaw fist
extended.
And I hold up my nub and I'm like, nub to fist.
Yeah, and then we start singing, nub, nub, nub.
Gonna get some nubs. Nub.
Hey, listen, these guys are, and so I think if I remember correctly, our dilemma now is that we can get everything we need supply-wise if we throw the fight. However, we'll then have to spend another several months
working our way back up the wrestling ladder,
building our already false started careers as professional fighters, or we can beat them, risk a town riot, get the money, but maybe not the supplies. And then we found out that they are actually gigantic and have bigger, better mechs than I do.
Yeah, so we haven't seen them yet.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we heard. Sorry, we saw a hulking and imposing clues, I guess.
Yeah, there's like a big. It's like their dressing room is inside of some big industrial warehouse. We heard noises, things being thrown around, mechanical sounds. Things like that. We've heard, you know, the sounds of things, you know, about to move and the doors are starting to roll open.
All right. Well, hey, Brian, I think we're on the same page. We are going to beat these people within an inch of their lives and take the money and run.
Yeah, man. That's never gone wrong for us. We're pretty much paragons of combat, especially what with me being maimed and having a chainsaw for a hand and or alternatively in my inventory, a claw that gives the middle finger and you having an 80% charged up set of battle armor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, keep in mind that, you know, these are the town heroes. These are the town heroes.
Yeah. I make sure to turn around to the audience.
Brian, how tough could they be? If they were real heroes, they would be out on the road like we are. Like, we literally didn't even, like, we fought each other for 5 seconds and immediately got signed as a touring act. If these guys were any good, they'd be out there.
If they were any good, they'd be out there digging wells and feeding the homeless. But what are they doing? I say loudly so the audience can hear. They're wrestling. Oh, what a great contribution to society. Seems to me like the best thing your town can deal with is us crushing them so they actually do something productive for this crap hole. That's right. Your town's a crap hole. We're from out of town. We're foreign. Look at my passport. It's different than yours.
Yeah. Brian stops for a moment as a bottle crashes on his head.
And I was like, that's savages. You're all savages.
Yeah.
And somebody runs up to him and picks up the glass because of the deposit.
Brian's head is as hard as a rock. I bet you nobody can break a bottle on Brian's head. It's impossible.
I immediately hide between the legs of Mech Justin and shield my head.
Yeah, so Justin's partially powered up. Now, have you decided, are you going to win this or throw this?
Well, I mean, I feel like we should try to win it, right?
Win it, right?
Yeah.
I didn't hear you talking out of the side of your mouth. What was that?
Oh, I said win it. Yeah, we should try to win it.
No, we're winning it. Yeah.
Okay, all right, yeah.
All right. So, the dramatic unroll of the garage door. Somebody, bam, 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 it's broken. Keeps raising. Now you get fog.
I roll my fist with my stub with the chainsaw forward as if to say, speed it up, Jack.
I start rolling the dice.
Now, laser through the fog. Old school, like 80s style, like laser tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I roll my eyes auspiciously and gesture saying, these guys, am I right?
I now start rolling the dice with both hands.
Now you hear you see there's a band off to the left, electric guitars, everything playing. Unironically, Final Countdown.
I roll my eyes so hard that one of them falls out and I stumble over to pick it up, dust off the dirt, toss it in my mouth, clean it off, and then put it back in my eyeball.
I unironically ask Brian, do you think that's really Europe?
Half of them. They had a merger with Asia. It's really kind of a... Asia! The drummer from Berlin.
And, weirdly, they're covering Toto's Africa. That's the weirdest part.
Yeah. They did a concert the other night with Kansas. And it was, you know, it's interesting. They're playing their hearts out. It's like kind of like the only song I really know. And the audience is cheering, Congo, Mongo, Congo, Mongo, right? And then all of a sudden, two shadows step in front of the laser light and the fog, right? It just like an eclipse, like a total eclipse
of the heart.
Like I saw. Did you see the total, Brian, or did you see the partial?
Yeah, no, I saw. We had this discussion, and you know that I saw it while on the side of a lake, swimming and playing with the kids.
So it's a total, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The total eclipse.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's. I know. It's.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's fine. There's another one in 5 years. He's going to come to Austin.
Another one in 5 years. I know. It's fine. I know. I didn't ask anybody
Assuming
else.
Assuming he's still alive. I mean, you know, but at least you and I can be struck by lightning right now.
So, Brian, you have kind of a little bit of a religious experience when you see this kind of eclipse.
Oh, yeah.
You remember the moment. You remember the lake. Like, yeah. After Journey Quest started, but we won't. Don't write us in with, you know, timeline inconsistencies and stuff. It's an alternate universe, okay?
Sure.
So now you're like, oh man, you nudge Justin. Remember the eclipse? Oh, sorry. Anyhow.
Oh my God! Now I start doing Brian's moving on.
A step forward. Step forward, Congo and Mongo step forward. Crowd is just cheering. It's just like it's ecstatic. You can't even imagine this. And then you notice you're like, you kind of do this little double take like at each other. Like, were you seeing a thing I'm seeing kind of thing?
Hey, Justin, are you seeing the thing that I'm seeing? Because I'm seeing some stuff that I don't know how I feel about.
They're walking down a ramp.
Are you seeing what I'm seeing?
I mean, I'm seeing two guys, Gumbo and Dumbo. I don't know.
They're walking at a ramp, and as they get lower towards the ramp, towards the edge of the arena. I mean, it's like a junkyard arena. It's, you know, put together in a small little Mexican town. And they start getting closer towards the bottom of the ramp. You realize, like, these guys are kind of on the short side.
I lean over to Justin and I say, "Did you ever watch the director's commentary to Ridley Scott's Alien?"
No, Brian, I didn't.
Okay, well, then I watched it before everything went sideways in our universe. And in it, they built a set for the Nostromo, and they realized it wasn't big enough. So they actually, for the scene where the astronauts get out of the plane, they actually got children, and they dressed them up in spacesuits so that the ship would look bigger. I think what I'm trying to say is, I think these are children.
Watch Alien. What were you thinking?
I'm trying to say I think these are
children.
Sigourney
Weaver's a treasure.
I think Congo and Mongo are
talking about the same thing.
I think Congo and Mongo are children
of men.
No, like literal children. Like
Bryce actually has a photo of Congo.
Oh, okay, all right. Here. Squint your eyes. It's hard to see past that light, but take a look, Justin. Take a look right at Mongo or Congo, whichever one we're looking at.
He will have a photo of this in a moment.
Justin,
gotcha.
That definitely looks like an adorable 12-year-old boy in a luchador costume.
Well, no, I mean the grand tradition of the minis, the luchador minis. There may or may not be a child in there, but they're definitely tiny, and I definitely think that we can beat the hell out of them.
Okay, but realize there's a success path that we could sell this fight. Maybe we throw this fight to them, and then we get. We get the fuel and we get to go. Yeah, we'll have to work our way up back the rankings. But
so, what do you like? You like it on the rocks or salt or no? Do you like it frozen?
Wait, what? Like what?
The margaritas that I'm assuming the only reason why you would be forcing us to do another 2 months in Mexico, you're surely salivating over. Because there's no other reason for us to not punch these kids right in the face.
Okay, all right. Hey, let's take a look at the other one. We've seen Congo. What does Mongo look like?
Oh, yeah. We got to boot up the machine that has the photos here.
Okay. And by the way, I'm trying to buy us time. So I gesture and gesticulate as if you'd be like, oh, these guys. And I say, oh, if you're so brave, why don't you just cross this line? And I use my chainsaw arm to sort of drive it through the dirt on the ground, you know, Alamo style. Like, hey, you want to fight? You want us to give us your all and crush you? Then you just cross this line. Congo looks a little bit bigger dressed as a chicken.
Yeah. All right. Is it too late for us to get action on the under time-wise? Like, because we're definitely going to be able to punch this clock pretty quick.
More importantly, I'm still gesturing at my line. I'm just like, you want us to bring the pain? You just cross that line. But understand that line is a contractually binding obligation that obligates me to possibly kill you. Possibly kill you. This is a real thing. I might kill you.
Also, I would like to volunteer. I will cross the line from our side to kill you.
Okay, well, that's an independent offer from a third party. I'm mainly just offering to kill you if you cross this line.
Sure, but also, we've discussed it. We're on the same page. We'll also cross over the line and kill you just because we want to.
Now they're warming up against the ring ropes, and the guy with the chicken costume takes off the chicken costume, and now we see what this guy looks like.
All right, let's take a look at him. Oh, Justin, he's really tiny. He's really tiny.
He looks like Jeff Bezos, though.
He looks like what I'd imagine.
He may be the Jeff Bezos experiment.
He looks like what I would imagine the mighty Adam looked like, who was renowned for being tiny but strong. I gesture to Justin. Let's feet only. Can we start with feet only? That way we'll just kind of keep kicking them down.
Can we get another reminder real quick on the rules here? Is this to the death? Like, do we have to pin them? Like, what are the rules here?
Kind of the crowd will sort of decide, you know, it's whatever will keep them from rioting.
Okay.
Okay. So we just have to make sure that the crowd knows that we have asserted our dominance.
Okay. All right. Look, we're going all in. So I say, Justin, adopt the ascendant sorcerer. And I hope Justin understands that means that he kneels down on one leg and holds up his right arm to the sky. At which point I start running
Congo
forward.
Congo is climbing to the top of the ropes.
Okay. And I start running forward, running up Justin's back leg, up the small of his back, on his shoulders, and then finally leaping off the open palm of his mech as I hold aloft my chainsaw nubbed arm and aim it just as if Logan style. I'm just going to run the chainsaw straight through one of their hearts.
All right, so you're at Congo, who's up on the he's climbed the ropes, he's actually on the chain link fence, and he's like, you're right at his heart.
Yeah.
Okay, you come straight at him, chainsaw blurring, and Brian, it is like, it's like a really cool comic book panel, Frank Miller-esque, even though we're talking about, you know, a Wolverine run, but, you know, really, really cool, just this hard edges, sharp lines and stuff coming at him, it's glorious, Brian, it's glorious. Congo looks frightened, and then he laughs, and last moment, jumps out of the way. Your chainsaw cuts through part of the chain link fence, but now your arm is stuck, and you're dangling. You're dangling 15 feet off the ground.
I struggle, and then my eyes scan around.
And part of it cuts into your arm, and blood's trickling down.
I struggle and I scan all around looking for the camera so I can say—
As you're being rabbit punched in the nuts.
I turn to wherever the camera is and say, ever have one of those days?
Is that you get punched repeatedly in the—
Justin, I'm being punched repeatedly. You gotta help.
Mongo's running circles around Justin, right now, literally running circles. And now he's bouncing back and forth off of the ropes. Back and forth, building up momentum.
I try to kick him right in his little head.
You kick him. Actually, you graze him. He's not expecting it. It happens faster than he realizes him. So he's sort of just wobbling around and like he's actually directly underneath you.
I step on him. Fatal blow.
He rolls out of the way at the last moment, and you forgot now that Congo, having trapped Brian, is free. And you feel somebody jump onto the back of your neck and to start grab at valves and stuff.
Meanwhile, while this is happening, have I assessed what my best course of action is? I'm not impaled. I'm just sort of stuck, right? Is it possible?
You're a little stuck.
I begin to use my chainsaw to try to hack away at the pieces that are trapping me so that I can get out.
Okay. Vroom, vroom. You're starting to cut yourself free, and the fence is starting to lean in as you're starting to, you know, get more slack like that. Meanwhile, Congo is pulled out what may be an illegal, we don't know. I mean, if you're allowed a chainsaw, he's pulled out a socket set and is trying to unfasten some of Justin's electronics.
I grab Congo and I throw him as far as I can.
He's out of your reach. He's out of your you don't quite have that mobility there.
I jump flat on my back.
Oh, good. You all fall flat on your back. You hear this sound. Now, Mongo, who's rolled out of the way, frightened, terrified of what he sees, jumps on top of your chest and starts to kick your unprotected face.
Am I free from the chain link fence yet?
Brian, you just fell to the ground free.
Okay, great. I immediately rev the engine as loud as I can, and I say, welcome to the chain gang, and I lunge forward at him.
Okay. Congo
says, "Did you just say welcome to the gangbang?"
No, I pause mid attack and say, "No, I chain gang. It was, I have a chainsaw." And am I the only one even
chain
writing
gang?
Yeah,
I thought this was like our new catchphrase.
No, I mean, look, we can workshop that in the future, but for right now, you've got a guy attacking your chest. Can I just slaughter him, please?
Okay, yeah, go, yeah, okay, kill him. Bad note.
I say, nice to saw you, and then I run forward with the chainsaw at him.
He does a backflip, lands on the ropes, looks down, and says in a very, very menacing British accent, "You killed my brother."
I was like, "You're damn right, and there's only one way to bring you the peace you deserve." And then I take a moment to awkwardly put the chainsaw in my backpack and remove the fist that can only make the middle finger gesture. And I was like, and that's
your pleasure fist, the pleasure fist,
the pleasure fist. I say, and that's to kill you too. Prepare for the black sleep of death. And then I jump forward, making a fist with the pleasure fist. And I'm like, but this won't be pleasurable.
Now remember, he's more agile than you, so he jumps out of the way, and now your fist is stuck in the fence. And he drops to the ground and starts punching you in the testicles.
Okay, I just disconnect the fist and drop. I leave it up there in the.
Okay, good move. Good move.
And then I reattach the chainsaw. Fist.
Am I back on my feet?
Are you?
Well, I was on my back when Brian chased him.
Are you trying to get back on your feet?
Yeah.
You're back on your feet. You turn over and you look behind you. And you just see the sunken cavity of what you did to Mongo, you know.
Okay, I pick up the corpse of Mongo and I pretend like, "Oh, look at me! I'm Mongo. I love doing flips. Oh, look at my socket wrench!"
I waste an entire turn of action to stand there horrified at what Justin is doing. I forfeit an entire move.
Congo rolls underneath the ropes and the chains, runs away.
What is the crowd's reaction to my grotesque act of barbarism?
They're watching where Congo's going because they hear all of a sudden he goes into the warehouse and the crowd is horrified at what you've done, but now they're just in stunned silence. And now the Congo runs into the fog. There's loud metal moving, sounds of things coming there. And then the sound of small feet running back towards the ring.
Okay, while all that is happening, I'm continuing to do what I was doing before, but I've changed one octave higher for maximum mockery.
All right, to get the best view, I immediately run and climb up the back, hop on the shoulders of Mecha Jury, and hold kind of like a gangster would hold a sidearm sideways. That's what I'm doing with my chainsaw as I'm scanning the area around, waiting for some kind of impending swarm attack.
Are you want to see me do a back handspring?
Congo comes running back to the edge of the ring. Remember, you're inside of a cage now that's been locked shut, but he was able to roll out. He's holding a flamethrower. Send some flames into the sky. The audience is cheering.
Okay, I realize, Justin, we got to get the crowd on our side. And there's only one move I know to do in this situation. We got a flamethrower pointed right at our face. So I stand on your shoulders and I turn to the audience and I say, "The concept of resistance to fire is one as old as history itself."
And I say, "Brian, like, you created the perfect diversion because I'm going to execute the brother shot put." And I throw the corpse of Mongo at Congo as hard as I can.
But remember, you're still in the cage and he's standing outside the cage. So it's just
I thought he was back. Sorry.
No, he's standing outside the cage about to use the flamethrower on you on the inside.
Do it anyway.
I hold out his brother. I'm like, you're having to burn your own brother, you freak. You freak, you're going to kill your own brother with a flame fire.
He's hesitating, and then
mi hermano!
Okay, I look to my chainsaw, and I open up the fuel canister part, and I gauge how much gasoline is in my chainsaw.
You got about a quart, which is amazing, because you've never bothered to refill it until now.
I hold it up to my mouth and I empty a good mouthful of gas in there and then replace the cap.
The crowd is very curious and confused by this. They're all kind of doing this leaning on their hand, kind of like.
I look down to Justin and I raise my eyebrows significantly as if to ask, "You want in on this, bro?"
I do, knowing that there's not like this has never gone poorly for me before.
Okay, so I twist open the cap and I pour more of the gasoline into Justin's mouth. So we each have a mouthful of gasoline, and then I point forward as if to say, "Let's charge at the guy who has a flamethrower at us."
Now you hear somebody in the crowd go, "Have they no shame? What is next? Using the blood of the corpse to protect themselves?"
I gather Brian under my arm, and with my mecha arms, I lift the corpse and wring it out like a dish towel.
I dance as if it's a beautiful shower and flap my arms like a gazelle.
Then I make a solid eye contact. Brian, what's our next move? Just pause so I can. I have one parting line.
I think our next move is to try to time the moment he fires the flamethrower. We dodge the side, but then we blow our fuel at Dumbo or Gumbo.
All right, yeah. So that's our plan. We're waiting for him to shoot the flamethrower.
But
he aims the flamethrower at you, you know, and he goes, "Adios, muchachos."
Click. Yeah.
Hold on a second. Adjust it. Does it. "Adios, muchachos." And he clicks it, and the flame goes about a foot in front of there. He's like, "Ugh." I realize there's a dial.
I preemptively blast him with my mouth full of gas so that he's covered and his hands are covered in the hopes that when he pulls the trigger, he'll burst into flames.
So as you spray your gas at him, actually, the flame is on the edge of the flamethrower. It does ignite, and a big fireball engulfs Congo.
Oh!
I spit my gasoline on him, his already a flame engulfed body. And as I spike his brother's wrung out corpse on the ground, I outstretch my mech arms and turn to the audience and scream, "Welcome to the gangbang!"
Congo is screaming. He's on fire. Like, "Ay, ay, ay!" Starts spinning in circles, right? Runs into the audience. Which, unfortunately, they were having tequila specials, and it got a little messy. Audience catches on fire.
Oh.
Right? They're like, "Oh, my, yay!" They start scattering. There's another audience on the other side. People run in there. They catch on fire.
I start running around what I assume is the octagon of chain link fence.
The only safe place right now. People start flooding in around looking for running back and forth because you're safe inside of the fence. Just the smell is the only thing getting to you.
Okay. I start building a sandcastle. Just to pass the time.
I scan around and start looking for our agent, and I just start making tapping my wrists like.
He's over by the hot dog cart and the churro cart and the tamale cart and he's eating. He's like, huh. Watching this.
I'm just making eye contact that I'm just trying to say, like, should we leave? Like, when should we just get out of here?
I would wait for the burning people to stop running around.
All right. So,
I lean over to somebody that looks as if that they are staff here. I grab one while they're out trying to rescue.
Trying to put people out of, you know, off take.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I pull him out away, and say, "Hey, don't want to be a bother here. Is there a green room or somewhere like that we can go just away from the fire?"
You monster! You monster!
Well, yes.
The trailer over there.
I point out, like, yeah, no, that's our bit. Look, the monsters will be in our trailer. Once everybody's put out, just, you know, if you can make the checkout to cash, that'll be great.
The agent is like, ooh, the monsters of El Paso. Oh, I like this.
That's great. I also retire to the green room, and I rifle through the DVD library looking to see if they have the Venture
people
Brothers.
Still running around outside on fire, screaming.
No,
back
that's
forth.
Great. Specifically, I find Venture Brothers season 2, and I pop it on there, and I wrinkle my nose in disgust that they only have an old standard definition CRT screen instead
of. Now, mind you, there's actually 3 small children sitting there on the leather couch, and they all sort of look small, and they remind you of what Congo looked like, you know, reading books, playing iPads, and they go, "Oh, are you Papa's friends?"
No.
He never lets us watch the match, and he makes us speak this way, even though he has a British accent.
I'm pretty sure your dad was asking for, what was your name?
Oh, my name, I was named for my father's favorite YouTube personality. I am Tom Merritt.
All right, listen, Tom, little Tom Merritt.
Yeah, I think your dad was looking for you. He's like, Tom, where's Tom? So you better go out there.
My brother, Jerry, he say daddy was so excited that he get to meet his heroes tonight. Right, Bri-Bri? Bri-Bri looks down from his iPad where he's playing Hearthstone, even though there's not a real internet connection to get updates. It's amazing. Yeah. Oh. Are you daddy's friends? Daddy said he's going to play with you.
I said, you know what, kids? We're better than daddy's friends. We are your new daddies.
What? Yeah, I looked to Brian and I'm like, I don't know.
Nope, we're going to take care of these kids. We're going to, what was it that your dad promised to do for you?
College education.
You know what?
Trips to Disney World.
We got something.
Okay, so let's also understand apocalyptic world. Just go ahead and leave. I mean, we got your address. We can wire you some money. It's gonna be fine.
Okay. I was like, Justin,
Why are you covered in blood, by the way?
I feel like the better thing for us to do is to actually take them on the road with us and give them a real education on the road of the school of hard knocks. But if you want to bail, I figure we can, you know, just give them the prize purse that we won in this match.
Manager's here. Hey, guys, listen. Good news. We've got our gas. We can head on to Las Vegas. It's good. I think this is good.
Great.
I think like the mortality rate is like 97%. So there's not a lot of people left in the town, but I got them to pay out anyways.
Great. So we got room on the tour bus for 3 little ones, right?
What's your kink, man?
No kink. I just want to get them to – I mean, we can't leave them here. The town's all destroyed. What kind of future will they have?
Brian. You're absolutely right, and I think that we should privately discuss how we're going to take care of these kids on the tour bus by ourselves.
No!
I think there's only one place where we can just clear our minds, figure out this whole thing on the tour bus by ourselves. You guys, you kids understand that, right? The adults hash some stuff out.
The agent looks at the kids. He's like, I don't know if tour bus is really the place for these kids.
I look at the agent and I say, you listen here, you son of a bitch. We're going to take care of these kids right after Brian and I, without the kids, talk about how we're going to do it on the tour bus.
I start walking. I scoop up all three kids like a jolly uncle and say, who likes small places? And I open up one of the
kids
places.
Are terrified right now. They're
okay,
terrified.
I give them a hug and I was like, hey, man.
You're kidnapping the kids.
Yes,
Brian.
I'm kidnapping the kids. I'm not going to leave the kids behind. I take the kids and I go in the back and I sit down and I'm in the very back part away from all the sleeping areas, and I close the door and I lock it, and I was just like, you could just go to the next town because we're not leaving these kids here in this decimated wasteland.
This woman comes running out after the bus. Oh, my ninos.
Yeah, they have a mom, Brian.
Yeah, I know. I was like, lady, listen, you and I both know there's not a bright future for this town now that it's destroyed.
No, it's very bright. Look at the fire.
But
and also she can move.
We're going to Bryce Vegas, and your kids can they become blackjack dealers and Uber drivers, and it's gonna be great.
Okay. I get in car now. She climbs in the RV.
Okay, great. You take care of all the kids. All right,
she's like, can I stop talking like this, by the way, in this town? It's really a weird thing. I think it's a little bit racist.
You
know what?
You do you. Just for the record, you guys stay in the back of the bus, and we'll let you know when you're needed.
Hashtag problematic. Yes. All right, fine.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Onwards to Bryce Vegas.
Huzzah!
All right, so who do we fight in Bryce Vegas?
Well, we're going to find out, but as you drive away, it's a really long straight road, and it seems like every rearview mirror and reflection catches the flames of the town still on fire. And every now and then you see like a little glow running away from the town as somebody tries to escape, but they're still on fire.
I nudge Mecha Jury on the elbow. I'm like, that's great advertising. Everyone's going to know. What's her name again? Monsters.
Monsters of El Paso.
Yeah, of El Paso. Yeah, no, I'm excited.
Yeah. Agents.
Tell you what, goodbye to the gangbang.
Agent comes back, smoking cigars, like, listen, gentlemen, I had no idea how you were going to get your way through this one. Brilliant. Brilliant. And if you pull this in Las Vegas, I'm going to castrate you myself.
Oh, so that was not so great?
For here, it was fine. We pull this anywhere else, may not work so much.
Okay,
you know,
all right.
Setting the town on fire.
Was it the murder or the arson?
A little bit the murdering the crowd.
Got
some
it.
Places
oh, okay.
That's a good gimmick.
That's where we
some
gotta keep the line.
I'm not saying get rid of the gimmick.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, you know, if we can, maybe we'll change our names to Credible Threat. You know, when we say we're gonna burn all you alive, like they'll know we mean it.
We'll workshop that one too.
Okay. Anyway. All right.
Yeah. So the catchphrase. What do you think about? I mean, can we get that on a T-shirt for the next stop?
We'll burn
working
you alive.
We may have a copyright issue with Vivid Video, but we'll work on it. Brian, I'm sure you want to go spend time with your new Mexican family. Justin, we're going to hang out here and drink beers.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I go to the back and I attempt to explain the nuanced rules of my enhanced version of Monopoly.
And the RV comes to a screeching halt, and the agent runs forward to the front of the cab, goes, oh, no, comes back. Gentlemen, we have a problem. There's a roadblock. Next time on Journey Quest, we'll find out what's blocking the road.
Ooh. Oh, man. We got to get to Bryce Vegas. Jesus. I murdered that whole town so we could get to Bryce Vegas. And that's 2 months in Mexico.
I mean, we did. We did dodge that bullet. We don't have to do our time in the lower leagues.
Any picks?
Yeah, I got a pick. I went to go see me a movie. I believe it led the nominations for the Golden Globes this afternoon. It is The Shape of Water by Guillermo del Toro. And it was the first Guillermo del Toro movie that I really, really liked since Pan's Labyrinth. I thought it was really well done. It is definitely him throwing his fastball, you know, fairy tale, you know, magical realism. But it was good. All the performances are really good. Michael Shannon is just a great, great villain. So recommended Shape of Water.
What was The Shape of Water, by the way? Did we ever get an answer on that?
You do. The very last, the very end, you find out why the movie's name what it is.
The I watched The Disaster Artist last night.
Oh, that was what I wanted to go see, but it was sold out. Is it what'd you think?
It was great. I love it. You know that Bonnie's got a thing for annoying voices. That's why she won't watch the Mr. Plinkett reviews. That's why she won't watch South Park. It's just annoying voices drive her nuts. And so I'm like, "Hey, Disaster Artist, we can go see it." She's like, "Great." And then on the ride there, I'm like, "Oh, you should watch this." And I hand her my phone and say, "Watch the best of the clips of The Room." And she's like, "Well, that was funny." She was like, "So what's this movie we're watching?" I'm like, "Oh, it's about the making of that movie." And she was just like full on like, "God, oh, damn it. Why?" You know, and she was not pleased.
Did you U-turn or?
No, I mean, she wanted to in that moment. But she ended up loving it. We both loved it. It's got a lot of heart. It's delightfully awkward at all the right moments. And of course, you could tell the moments that it's simplifying things in just the right way. But there's this awesome victory lap they do after the story's over, but just before the credits roll, where they side-by-side play simultaneously the recreated scenes from The Room and the actual scenes from The Room. And it's just uncanny. It's so wonderful how much effort they put into exactly identifying what was so bad about that movie and replicating it. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
I'm pumped to see it. I am very, very excited.
I love the trailers for it. I want to see it because I feel a strange kind of empathy for Tommy Wiseau. And I'm like, man, I'm closer to that than.
Well, and there's sometimes moments of like awkward environmental things on set, and it was great, and I'm sure you will watch it, and much like I did, I thought of specific moments during Hacking the System when it was super, super hot and you can't acknowledge it. You just have to mop off the sweat and plow through it, and you know, maybe somebody is arguing on set and it's super awkward for everybody around or whatever. Like, there is a lot of moments where it's just like, oh, I've had a taste of that in reality. That's a weird feeling.
Yeah. I'm going to reiterate my pick, which is A Fire Upon the Deep, which is one of the best, great, great sci-fi books dealing with AI, things like this. And this was written in 1993. This book was so – Werner Vinge was ahead of everything. You know, even like augmented reality in like 2006, I think Rainbow's End. This is just, I think Werner Vinge is the guy who came up with the term, the singularity, as far as I understand it. It's how we use it. So he's a brilliant book. Love the book. It's neat because it deals both with super high tech civilizations and the very, very low tech civilization, which is basically packs of dogs that have each pack has a single consciousness. Very, very, very much dig it. And the other thing too is I watched Spider-Man Homecoming again. Delightful
yes.
movie.
Still delightful good movie. I rewatched Logan because I saw it. What's funny is I saw it on HBO now, and I was like, oh, I should watch that. I'm like, oh, but I already bought it on Amazon. So seeing it on HBO made me load up Amazon and rewatch it.
Oh, have you used Movies Anywhere yet?
No. Yeah. What's the story on that one?
So Movies Anywhere is a collaboration between Disney and the other studios. I think Paramount's like the lone holdout, but whatever movies you sign up for, whatever you authorize your iTunes account, your Amazon account, your Google Play account, your Vudu account, and all of those movies are available in one app. So if you have
if you have an Apple TV now, it's available for Apple TV. So you can watch whatever, you know, you don't have to, you could, if you bought your Amazon movies, you can watch them on your Apple device. Or if you have a Roku, you can watch your Apple movies now. You know, the exception is done studio by studio. Paramount, still the holdout on that. So that's really cool. And then, as you know, Amazon Prime's now on the Apple TV.
Yeah,
so
that's
it's a really good place just to unify your library.
Yeah, we talked about that on Cord Killers. I'm now remembering, but yeah.
Yeah. So cool.
Hey, by the way, Disaster Artist nominated for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy, and James Franco for Best Actor.
Golden Globe?
For the Golden Globes, yeah.
Right on.
This morning.
Gentlemen, it's been weird.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.